Good afternoon. Welcome to the Space Show, John.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Materials processing, much spoken about over the years, a number of experiments done. During the 80s, of course, there was a lot of talk about doing it on a shuttle. How commercially viable do you see materials processing in, say, the next decade?
Well, unfortunately, I think about 10 years ago, in the early development of commercial space activity, we had a great deal of, for lack of a better term, hype. People who are imparting to what might be done in space with this new space shuttle things that were way beyond what we could really realistically expect. We have made progress in materials processing in space. This one of the CCDSs, the one at the University of Birmingham in Alabama, has grown some extraordinary protein crystals and things such as that. There's a long step between positive experimental results and a commercial business, no matter what field you're in. And it's going to take a while to get there. So when you say in the next 10 years, I don't know. What we need is the things that I think activities like Pegasus, Comet, and Spacehab are all doing, which is more flight opportunities and flight opportunities at less cost. The more we can do of that kind of activity, the better the chances are that we'll have successful experiments. The more successful experiments we have, the better the chances that something will move forward to something that is in fact a commercially viable business. But if you look at research and development across the board and leave space out of it, the number of activities that make it from the basic research stage to the commercial stage is 1 or 2 or 3%, and that's not going to be any different in space.
So we'll hear a lot of proposals. Many of them will just still end up on the drawing board.
Yes.
Go no further.
As they will in every field of science and technology. Some things work. A story that I always like to remember is that the vice president of IBM, who turned down this fledgling little company that wanted IBM to invest in them because they had this copy machine, and of course everybody had carbon paper, so we didn't need copy machines. The company, of course, was Xerox. And no foresight. But you never know. And the point is that it's almost too important not to be involved in it. We have to continue to do the research. We have, as we do in other areas. And there is the chance. There are unique properties to associated with being in space, and things that you cannot replicate here on Earth. And if as we're doing the experiments, as we learn more about those properties, we'll learn how to use them to our benefit. We have to get the costs of getting there down. That's really the major drawback. And when you ask the question, what flashes through my mind is, no, we will not have a commercially viable business until going to space becomes more routine and becomes less expensive than it is. And that's something that several organizations are working towards, including most of the space agencies.
Australia's national communications carrier, AUSSAT, is proposing to use satellites for mobile communications in what's known as L-band, L being one of the designations for the frequencies to be used. In the United States, a company called Motorola is proposing a large constellation of low Earth orbit satellites to provide a cellular telephone type service. And this would be offered worldwide, including Australia. How do you see these two markets? Are they in conflict with each other?
Well, the two systems certainly have some degree of overlap. The Motorola system will require 77 low Earth orbiting satellites. It is intended that you would get a personal phone number and carry a mobile phone, much like the cellular types of telephones you have now. And these pieces of equipment would allow a businessman, for example, from New York to land in Moscow or Sydney and be able to make a phone call immediately. It's an ambitious program. Motorola is a very large worldwide company with a lot of strength. They are facing some significant technical problems. They are facing some significant financial problems in the sense of being able to raise the estimated $2.5 billion to do this. And lastly, and perhaps most significantly, they're facing some interesting international regulatory problems in who controls the frequencies and will they be able to get into every market. The proposal for L-band mobile communication from OSSAT, and there's a similar one for a company called AMSC, American Mobile Satellite Corporation in the United States, and one in Canada also with a program called MSAT. There is some overlap, there's no question. The question that must be addressed, I guess, is one, is the frequency band so valuable that one of these should not be allowed to go ahead? I don't think that's a question I'm qualified to answer. The second one, from a purely commercial basis, is there may not be adequate business for them both to survive. But that's what competition is all about.
Correct.
And
if it's going to be commercial, then you have to take
that. You take your business risk.
Yes.
Motorola obviously believes, looking at it on a worldwide basis, that they can make it work and make money at it. Clearly, OSSAT, looking at the Australian market, believes they can do the same thing. They're both clearly aware of each other, and it is not, I don't believe it is the position of any one body or any one person to say, no, they shouldn't go ahead. If they want to compete, okay.
Well, thank you, John, for joining us today on the
Space
Show. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you.